Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to The Payoff. Jeff, are you scared?
Feeling spooky, that's for sure.
I was gonna just try and scare you and just go boo, but I didn't know if that would work or not. You'd probably see me coming.
Not John Cena. Yeah, you know, you can't, I can see you. So you did send me like that ghost emoji. So, you know, yeah, you tried. I give you credit for that, man.
Halloween Havoc 1996. I'm Tom. This is Jeff. We've got a Cruiserweight Classic to cover. But first, Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing good. Like you said, times, you know, won't be handing candy out this year for the kids, but that's okay. You know,
I'm guessing that just won't happen.
I'm not around here. I don't even think, like, you know, where I'm at, like the trunk or treat either, that doesn't even seem to be a thing. So sucks to suck, kids. Sorry, but no Halloween for you.
Man, everything is getting ruined. You know, as we go through the calendar, you're like, oh yeah, you can't trick or treat. You know, actually someone else brought something up to me the other day was, is there going to be like Santa at the mall?
Oh shit. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Probably not.
All these little things, like, oh man, that's upsetting too. Like, what am I, you know?
How old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
36.
36. Okay. So this would have been the 36th straight year that you had your picture with Santa, but it's going to get ruined.
Yeah, well, and if it circles all the way back around to the Easter Bunny again, too, next time, like, that's when I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to cope. Like,
you're more of an Easter Bunny, Mark.
I get, you know, it's sometimes like, you know, I was one, that's how big of a, just a character actor I am. I wouldn't even cry when I was a kid around the Easter Bunny. Like, that was just, I manned up, like, you know, that was what I did. So, it's a good point. You know, I have to find somebody else's lap to sit on, I guess, but that's a little weird, but that's okay. Hey, well, a little weird around here.
That's why we have Tinder and Bumble, and
that's right. Yeah.
That should be their tagline. Find the
hopefully
new
my girlfriend. Not listening. That's all right. So
probably okay. Not. Probably no, not.
Yeah, it's okay. But does she know? All right, though, man.
She know you have a wrestling podcast?
Yes, she does. She's all right with it. Like I said, I've said off the air, like, she, you know, I've gotten her slowly to watch a little bit of it. Like, she hates and likes like certain people that she shouldn't, and it's weird who she does like and like the demographics and stuff like that. And so it appeals to her, like, you know. So whatever. So yeah, slowly getting her into it.
So I haven't even told you this. I am dressing my 2-month-old up as Hulk Hogan for Halloween.
As you should.
I mean, absolutely, right? It's like I pretty much have the entire outfit.
Are you going to pre-tear his shirt, or is he strong enough at this point where he will be able to rip off the shirt Hulkamania style on his own?
At two months old, they cannot do much of anything. So unfortunately, this year he will not rip off his shirt. But maybe next year when he's Hollywood Hogan, he will be able to rip off his shirt.
That's right. He's got to have the heel turn. Is that what it is?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, maybe that's what we do. Maybe, you know, maybe on odd years, he's a baby face, and on even years, he's a heel.
You could paint like a little goatee on him. He'd be fine. You know, it'd look good in the pictures, if nothing else. Like.
So at Payoff Pod,
yeah. Twitter, let's cover that.
Yep. Instagram, Facebook, at Payoff Pod. Love hearing from everyone. Yep. Tell us why you chose this one. And I'm actually curious myself.
Yeah. So 'tis the season for one, like kind of the spooky, yes. You know, where we're at. And so, you know, as we over the summer tried to kind of gear all of our episodes more toward kind of what was happening in the real world and anniversaries and thing like that. And this one, so we're about just barely a week over, like the anniversary of this episode, or this match rather, this card, all that. Next week's anniversary was a little bit more important. We got the big one, of course, that we have to talk about, the wonderful Hollywood Hogan versus Warrior match, but that's we'll save that for another day. But yeah, this one though, it was one of those that just kind of was appearing on a lot of different lists. Once we kind of dug into it a little bit, or I dug into it a little bit, I didn't realize like just how kind of early in these guys' career some of these matches were. And so it was interesting to kind of see this. And so, because I didn't really start really watching a lot of WCW until like the 2000s. And so this was before a lot of that, but primarily it was the anniversary. And then also it was just one of those, somehow it managed to be on a lot of best of lists, but it also flew under the radar in a lot of ways, which we'll talk about too.
You watched a lot of WCW in the 2000s?
No.
Why? I was just going to say, if you watched WCW in 2000, my apologies.
It would have, well, yeah, I would have been.
No wonder you don't want to cover more WCW on here. My God.
Well, it would have been because like high school. So yeah.
You probably caught like, I mean, they, you know, obviously up until 2001. So 99, 2000 into 2001. I mean, it sucked. It was,
awful. That's one of my vivid memories of high school is I had a bunch of buddies over and we watched Goldberg lose for the first time. We had ordered the pay-per-view and we were not like, of course, because you don't drink underage, kids, don't do that. So I remember we specifically weren't drinking at this one because mom and dad wouldn't allow it. But we watched Goldberg lose for the first time. So I do remember that. So this is a few years after this, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was terrible. Well, and then right after that was the finger poke of doom. So right, Nash gets the title. And then, I mean,
I was watching it at an okay time, but then boy, did it ever crater. Yeah.
Ugh. All right. Well, Jeff, let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. So Halloween Havoc 1996. I know we've talked about this before. I just dug the Halloween Havoc set, the logo, the titles, all of it. And then
true themed pay-per-view.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
This made sense versus some of what, you know, we're seeing nowadays.
Yeah. And so, I really like that. And, always thought it was cool. It was in Vegas, you know, so 1996, I'm 12 years old, right? I had never been to Vegas. But I just thought it was cool. I'm like, I can't wait to go there sometime. And it actually took me until my senior year of college, the first month of Vegas, right before I graduated. But yeah, I always like, it was one of those places. Like I was just like, oh, I'm really excited to go there. And so when they'd have this show there, I just thought that was really cool. I'm like, it's just in the middle of everything. And this MGM Garden Arena, which as you know, I was at, I guess 2 years ago now for, the AEW event, but, man, it's awesome. I mean, anytime you can be somewhere and walk to something, it's cool, right? Like you're on Bourbon Street and you go to a Saints game or a WrestleMania. That's cool. You're in New York City, you're like completely removed from like a wrestling event, and then boom, you're in MSG and you're at the event, right? So I just always love that when you can just be somewhere really, really cool, like doing other things, and then all of a sudden like you're right in the middle of an event. Vegas, obviously the same way, where, I mean, think about like, you know, this show starts at 5 o'clock Vegas time. Yeah, you wake up, you walk the strip, you gamble a little bit, have some beers by the pool, like go to a wrestling show. That to me, Jeff, is about as good of a day as I could ask for. And then,
maybe
you cap it off with some red meat, nice steak at the end of the day. But that's like, to me, an awesome day. So I bet it was really, really fun going to these shows. You know, and even now, WWE, God, I think they're now at the arena across the street. They're not in this building, but they're the one across the street where the Golden Knights play. I'm just about positive because I actually almost went up there for a show a few years ago, pay-per-view. So they're on the strip now. You know, at some point we're going to get a WrestleMania in Vegas. I mean, it's just a matter of when. And that stadium, and you know, I don't know if you have
that
seen
new stadium.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be great. And that's walking distance to the strip too. So that's going to be a really, really fun one. Just one other random note as I'm thinking about it. Have you seen the new LA football stadium?
I've seen like pictures of it. Yeah,
dude. So they've got, it's like, it has a dome, you know, I don't say a dome, but it's covered, but then air goes through there. So it's like kind of an indoor outdoor thing. and then pretty like clear top, and you know, it's sunny most of the time in Southern California. That is going to be a hell of a venue for a WrestleMania. I cannot wait. So, I mean, now we're supposed to have it this year, but I mean, California is obviously going to be a little stricter than other states in terms of crowds. Do you even see a crowd being at WrestleMania this year? Because I don't.
I don't either. Yeah. It feels weird thinking about April. You know, it's months away at this point, but I think you'd almost have to. Yeah.
So I wonder, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. I mean, I guess you just have to go to a state where they're allowing some type of crowds, but, you know, I really don't know. And if you've seen something, tell me, but I don't know why they haven't tried to do some outdoor stuff yet.
Yeah, and I remember reading rumors of that, and that might
for SummerSlam.
Yeah, well, and after the contract, you know, we'll have to see because it's the Thunderdome stuff, and
like, I think people would forgive them. Like, think about the old Bash at the Beaches that were on the beach. I mean, you know, you don't need a whole lot. You need some grandstands, and you need an entrance. I mean, do you honestly care if you don't get like the huge LED board? I mean, we stare at the damn like LED entrances, you know, 12 hours a week. It's like, if guys just came out of a curtain, would you really care? I wouldn't give a shit.
And when we're recording this, like we're still in the Thunderdome. We haven't had any update or anything. And so, like, you know, and looking back on it, like doing the Thunderdome stuff has worked, you know, but it's the thing, it was outside the box. So why wouldn't you try something else that's outside the box? Because they proved that they could do it if they wanted to. Sorry about that.
Or even like theme weeks where it's like, hey, we're doing Raw and SmackDown at this outdoor venue in this city. And then if there's a pay-per-view, and then we go to a different city the following, I don't know, just something, you know, I know they're trying their best. I know there's a lot of moving pieces, but God, just give me something more interesting. So I would say my enthusiasm level for the current product is slightly below average from where it typically is right now.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. It's just this. All right. So Halloween Havoc 96, we're in Vegas, MGM Grand Garden Arena. We kicked it off with the match we're going to cover, Malenko and Mysterio for the Cruiserweight Championship. Jeff, you could have started every WCW pay-per-view with a Cruiserweight Championship match, and I would have never complained. You know, there was so much talent there that if every show kicked off that way, I'd have no problem. To me, it was a little programmatic in terms of like being predictable, but I don't care. Then we got DDP Guerrero in a Eddie Guerrero in a 13-minute match. Then we got the Giant Jeff Jarrett, a 9-minute match. Always tough to remember when Jeff Jarrett was in WCW versus WWF because before you know it, 97, he's back in the WWE. Then what, 98 or 99, he's out again because he, you know, it's just back and forth. Six and Chris Jericho. Six would beat Chris Jericho. Lex Luger would defeat Arn Anderson by submission. Kind of interesting, Jeff. You look at the card, four straight just single matches. You know, now we're so used to tag matches and triple threats and ladder matches and title matches. It's just odd to see four straight just grudges being settled.
We don't talk about them enough around here, but can we talk about just how many times like X-Pac's 1-2-3 Kid, Sean Waltman, has reinvented himself too? Like six, like all these different, like, you know, just crazy, like, you know, this and super early in his career on this one, but yeah, like good stuff there too.
And he was the Lightning Kid at one point too, before he was the 1-2-3 Kid. And he was kind of like an indie darling in the Northeast. So that's why they got real into him when he debuted on Raw, because they knew him as the Lightning Kid. And he's just so young at the time, just crazy. So then Steve McMichael and Chris Benoit would defeat the Faces of Fear, which was Meng and Barbarian. Our second to last match was the Outsiders, Nash and Hall, defeating Harlem Heat for the tag team titles. And then the main event, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. Hogan would retain his title against Savage. So, you know, WCW, man, they went back to just about everything. They got some Hogan Savage matches. They got the Savage Flair feud. They'd eventually get Hogan Warrior. right? If it was done before, they certainly all did these it again. They would have tried to get Sergeant Slaughter back if they could have. You know, like, I mean, they just kind of tried to redo all of these Hogan matches. Which, I mean, they're big stars. I get it. So interesting card. And Roddy Piper actually came out at the end, which is kind of cool. So big crowd, big gate, a bunch of merch sold. And yeah, man, Vegas was a good market for WCW. So storyline standpoint, I'm sure there's not a ton, but walk us through how we got to this one.
Yeah, and like you're right in this one. It's not the typical build we have. And I always think back of like, you know, I forget what I was watching. There was one of the Dark Sides or the, you know, WWE Network specials that they have on where they talk about how a lot of the top of the card booking, where we've talked about it before on the show with like the Hogan and the Savage and the Nash and NWO, like Scott Hall, like how they book themselves to be on the top of the cards and the behind the scenes politics of this. So many times the cruiserweight were never there. And I know we've talked, like, we'd have to go back and kind of listen to some of our previous ones, you know, Ray and Eddie and things like that. Like, these are just matches that, like, it was a hot opening. It was not necessarily a planned hot opening, but these guys weren't going to get top billing. And so, you know, so DiMolenko, he actually, it was September 1995. He was in NWA before this. He was a heel, came over to WCW, had kind of proved himself as being just successful in that role. He was actually at the beginning of that year, it was in a faction. It was Triple Threat. It was with Chris Benoit and Shane Douglas, actually. And so I didn't know that. And so, you know, little things where these guys, you know, kind of working together. But then it was that summer, actually, where prior to him coming over to WCW, it was on ECW where Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero were kind of having a feud, kind of going back and forth, things like that. It was actually these matches that kind of got these guys noticed. It was actually a August of this year, 1996, where Dean had his last match with ECW. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match against Eddie Guerrero. You know, they can't, it ended in a draw. It was actually both guys' last match with ECW. So it was interesting. Yeah, it's funny to me, like, you know, and you are our ECW guy around here, but just how many of these guys spent time there before, I say ECW was the true ECW we kind of know well. And kind of
Mysterio and Guerrero,
yeah,
Smilenko. I mean, it's just, you go through the list and oh yeah, and they had great matches.
Yeah. And I remember, and this was, you know, the nickname, the Man of 1,000 Holds, and being kind of the submission expert. I vividly remember him, even in like the old video games on N64, like him being the submission guy. Like, that was what he would do. Also, the Iceman, his nickname and things like that. So it was actually May of 1996. He beat Shinjiro Otani for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. He held it actually for a couple of months, and there was a lot of back and forth. So starting in March of 96 with Otani having the belt, and this was kind of, it was actually a New Japan event. It wasn't a WCW event. But so then May, Dean picked it up. Then Ray had it. Then Dean had it. And so, there, you know, there was some back and forth, and, you know, it just kind of who had it. Now, there wasn't, it was one of those where it wasn't like an ingrained storyline. It wasn't something that, you know, that made a sense from that perspective, but it made sense more that, like, these guys were just the top names in, I say, the cruiserweight and the kind of that, you know, that division of doing what they were doing. And so they were the best of the best. So you've got Dean that comes over and is doing that. And he had different feuds. He had defenses. It was against like Disco Inferno and Rey Mysterio and just all kinds of other people, but same boat, like Mysterio came over from ECW as well. Actually, he started in ECW in 1995. In the show we've talked about before, Gangsta's Paradise, beat Psychosis in that one. That was actually his debut. That they had 2 out of 3 falls count match, a Mexican death match. It, all, you know, again, just him having all these different, you know, matches and kind of proving himself there. He actually, again, another person that came over to WCW, Juventud Guerrera, yep, first part of 1996, them feuding in ECW there as well too. And so, as we said before, he made his debut as June 1996. It was Great American Bash. His first match was against Dean Malenko. And we've talked about this before at length and just kind of what he's done. But interesting how right out of the gate, like that way, he's taken on the champ. And so they obviously saw, you know, Dean had the belt this was a couple months prior to this, but seeing a lot in Ray, knowing that Dean can kind of help, you know, I say not necessarily carry the match, but have a match against Ray and they'll do a good job. So we had that. So a little bit of a back and forth that, you know, he had the belt prior to this as well too. And then Dean got it back. And so going into this match, you do have Dean as the, you have Ray as the champion bringing the belt into this one. And then us getting this match really just because they've had a couple at this point, like Dean had lost it to Ray previous. And so now we have this match. And so not like this whole long drawn out, like, you know, mic work and, you know, making a ton of sense on TV or anything like that. It's just that these guys had the back and forth, and I hate to say it, just kind of like this was the day it fell on the calendar, but in a lot of ways that's what it was, and it worked. Like, you know, this was just the planning and the match to open the card and hoping for a hot start. And so that's what we're going to find out about though.
Cool. Good, good recap. And, as always, if you want to follow along with us, we're going to start at the 4 minute mark of Halloween Havoc 1996. So 4 minutes on the dot, Halloween Havoc 96. Jeff, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right. So we got Mysterio coming to the ring.
A tiny Rey Mysterio.
Man, he looks so small.
He really does, yeah.
Like, just maybe because he's like being young too, but I mean, he got bulkier later in his career. I mean, he just looks a lot smaller, huh?
Well, and how we see him now, like, yeah. So he was born in 74. This took place in 96. So, like, yeah, see, you know, early 20s. He's a baby. Yeah.
He was born in 70. So he's 46?
74 he was born, yeah.
So he's 46.
Yeah, right now.
Wow. Currently.
Which seems crazy, like, but he's had that long of a career, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about just a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, what a career.
Well, you figure Dean, you know, too. Another. So right out of the gate, these guys, they had Dean going right at Ray. This is a big show. Like you said, like in Vegas, big show, like these guys, big stage. Ooh.
So he's going for the clover leaf. I love that move. I thought that was such a badass. Anybody do it nowadays? No, I haven't seen anybody do it in forever. Oh,
but you're right.
Such a badass move. I loved it.
It's super cool. Like it's cool. It really is.
And put it on a little quicker than the sharpshooter. Yeah, I just always preferred it for some reason. I thought it was so badass when I forgot about him using that. It's a great move.
And he went for, and like he was quick about it too. Like, that's the thing. And we know Dean Malenko a lot, you know, now is like the kind of, behind the scenes guy, and he's been involved in wrestling. Just, I do view him as that technical, like really quiet. He knows exactly what he's doing. And so I know too. So we're seeing a little bit of flippy shit here. I know you're not always the biggest fan.
No.
But, it's a little early though too. Yeah.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it when it's used like this.
Well, and that's a good way to, like, it's not a spot fest flippy shit. Like, no. It's making sense in the, like, context of the match right now. And this is like, God, like, this is the Ray I remember. He is all over the place. Like, I don't know about you. Are you in the mood for a Slim Jim? I just feel, I feel some kind of unnecessary, like, I feel
the desire to a Slim Jim. Oh yeah.
For those of you not watching right in this moment,
it's everywhere. It's on everywhere. The turnbuckles. It's on the mat.
So you got Dean on the outside now, and Ray, he just looks so fast. It's just crazy. Like, so, you know, some of the moves he's doing and the high flying spots. Absolutely.
Malenko's got the 1,000 on his back of his trunks, which just makes me giggle because of, what a move. Makes me giggle because of Chris Jericho, the man of 1,001 moves.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and that again,
and he had a list of them. He printed out like a list of them. He's like, wrist lock.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah. So yeah, you got Ray. What is he? Oh, fixing his mask. Yeah.
He's taking one off and putting another one on.
He is. Yeah.
And there's got to be a storyline reason for this, but I certainly have no idea what the hell it is.
And so the fans, a few of them on their feet, like kind of slowing it down a little bit here.
I guess when he won the championship, championship, and that's the mask he wants to wear when he defends.
There he goes. He had that. There it is. Wore that mask. There you go. Glad I unpaused it. That's the mask before he won the championship.
That was like in the movies when the commercial or the TV show is like moving the plot forward. That was like perfect. And we did not plan that. That was like perfect. Like Bobby the Brain announcing to us why he was switching masks. Like
great. That worked out really well.
What do you think of the putting all this stuff on the mats? I mean, obviously they have the advertisements, but then they have like the logo of the pay-per-view. Do you like that better or not? Because ECW actually did that sometimes too, but WWE never did that. The only time I can remember them having something on the mat was WrestleMania 12, and that's because they wanted to sell the pieces of the mat. But do you like it or not? It
sets the stage. And this was in a time too when you had like the entrance, but there wasn't a ton that you could do.
How much could it cost to print an extra mat out, right? Or a couple extra mats with the logo. I can't imagine it's that much in the grand scheme of things.
And even if you get a couple extras in the back and things like that. Oh my gosh. Ooh. That looked, and landed on his head, it looked like. It may have been the camera angle, too. It's one of those where you and I enjoyed so much, like the In Your House recently with NXT, where they brought back the In Your House set. It's like, it baffles me when I'm sure they're reading all those comments online and like, this is awesome and I love this and all this other shit. And then it's gone. Like, as quickly as we had it, it's gone and we'll never see it again. And so.
Well, look how well War Games was, people love the War Games thing. I mean, I think they're still doing it, but it's like stuff like that. I mean, God, and I know we talk about this a lot, but it's, do a King of the Ring every year, do a War Games. I mean, figure out ways to like integrate some of this stuff. Why wouldn't you? Like, you've so much content to produce. You have so many hours to fill. Not everything has to be a pay-per-view, but it's, doing some theme stuff. Like why not do a Halloween Havoc theme Raw or SmackDown, depending on, I think it's this year, it's on like a Saturday, Friday night SmackDown. Hey, Halloween Havoc takes over, or even do it at NXT. You own the intellectual property. Like, do a Halloween Havoc NXT. Why not?
Well, and they're doing this, we've got it coming up, like the standalone, they're like trying to do them more, like the standalone NXTs. We've got it in, or just had one recently, and then, they're not necessarily tying them to the big fours anymore. And so, have them be like that. I mean, like the reception of that stuff, like the War Games went over huge, like the In Your House. So yeah, just,
and if works. I were them, I'd do it. I are they ever doing them, the Saturday night or the NXT specials? Why not do them on Saturday night when AEW is running a pay-per-view?
Yeah, and that
why not? I mean, I know as a fan you're like, oh, it sucks, but like, who cares? Like, if I'm running a business and I'm trying to compete with them, I would do a free, a WWE Network free pay-per-view. I'd do it on a Saturday night and be like, hey, ours are $10.99 or $9.99 a month, theirs are $50 for the pay-per-view, and you get nothing else and none of the other content. Like, smart business.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
It's ultimately that competition makes both of them go balls to the wall to put on the best show they can. NXT's been great since AEW came along. AEW obviously is putting together a really nice product themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So you got Dean slowing the match down a little bit for those of you at home. Like, Ray, if you trying to, I say take to the air, it's kind of how these matches play out a lot of times, like grounding the high flyer.
Are there any sets that you've ever seen? Like when I ask you like about the best like sets or atmospheres of all time for a wrestling show, are there any sets that you just really, really liked?
It's weird because what pops into my head, it's all ECW or WCW sets.
Yeah.
Like it's rare, so what WWE does, like the Christmas set, they'll put the trees out and Braun will throw it into somebody, things like that, or rip up presents or something. It's just, there might be like the piece where like Rusev, Miro, drives the tank into Mania.
Yeah.
The car being driven in of this, or car or vehicle of some kind, is always a big thing. But like, nothing in like the In Your House, but we haven't seen it a whole lot. But yeah, it's so many of like, that's how I feel like it is in a lot of ways how WCW distinguished themselves and kind of separated themselves, was you did have like, and granted, we're not seeing it now, but it is one of those like during entrances. And like, I think like this and Bash at the Beach and just kind of like having that. Yeah, it's different, and it makes it, it does add a little something to it.
Man, you weren't kidding. Mysterio, he's just quicker. Close two count there. And he's absolutely quicker. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and it is weird. You know, the pop he got when he came back from Rumble was great, or for Rumble was insane. And so, because I think it was one of those that was rumored a little bit, but to actually have him show up. But at this point, that was a few years ago at this point. Like, yeah. He still got
he's
it.
Had a
like,
nice little run. I mean, a nice, like, couple year run. Now, was he in, I believe that he did some stuff with, what was that Lucha Libre show called?
Oh, Lucha Underground.
Yeah, was he on that for a little while?
I would have to double check.
I think he was. He was like part of season one or something and had a contract with them at one point.
And he may, I know a lot of those people on that show like were masked. And so people like John Morrison and things like that, you know, kind of have them. Yeah, he was Lucha Underground for a few years, actually. And okay, so, yeah.
He was gone for a while.
Yeah. And so a lot of those, Johnny Mundo was John Morrison. Yeah, just a lot of different people that, you know, you did have as well, like Ray Phoenix, who's in AEW now. And so a lot of those guys, I remember Jack Evans was one that I saw. He was a dark match when I was able to go to AEW shows. Like that was him and Kenny Omega, actually. It was a pretty good show or pretty good match. So, he spent, you know, a lot of time there kind of doing that. He was in New Japan for a little bit too, kind of looking over this. So yeah, 2018, January 2018 is when he came back to the Royal Rumble. And so he's pushing at this point, like almost three years. Yeah. And like, you know, we seeing the storylines that they've got his son in, is the whole family is in storyline right now. Like Vince is still pretty high on Ray, even after all this time. Absolutely. So
I think it's been good. I mean, I think it's been interesting. You know, it's a really good kind of, I don't say undercard like bad, but I mean, it's a good like undercard storyline with the son and, you know, the stuff with Rollins. And I think it's been pretty good. I think it's been pretty good. You know, look, I'm just happy in wrestling when there's a lot of storylines happening. Right. Yeah. I don't like when I put on Raw and it's like, well, there's nothing really happening. No, like, hey, we have the, you know, Orton Edge storyline. We have the Mysterio, Rollins Mysterio family storyline. Great. We have the world title picture with Drew McIntyre and so-and-so. Oh, that's interesting. You know, like, Reigns is a heel and him and Heyman are doing their thing. Like, great. There you go. So I mean, if we have like 8 or 9, 10 things going on, you know, even like this, like Mandy thing, you know, with Otis, it's like, all right, well, at least it's something. Like it may not be a great storyline, but at least they're doing something with these people as opposed to, oh, you know, so-and-so spilled coffee on that person. So, we're going to get a match after the commercial break.
Well, it's one of those where, like, do some more of these tournaments, do some more of these things to get some people some more screen time. And, like, you know, like, and so you get Dean with a sleeper hold, a lot of holds. Again, I mean, we know it, Man of 1,000 holds.
Well, they're doing, so, I mean, they're really doing the kind of like, you know, Malenko's, you know, ground game stuff. I mean, it's not, these are not too high flyers, you know. Well, that's the thing with Miss Malenko in the division is you get kind of a technician ground game guy against one. So it's a different type of match than, you know, him versus, Eddie.
And when you had the sound on right there, it, like the crowd's a little getting more and more into it too, which is really cool to see. And so kind of having that, but yeah, to your point about the storylines. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I think it's just one of those things where why, like, you know, I get that they have to fight for TV time, but at the same time, like, you know, you and I read the dirt sheets too and hear the rumors of like the script getting ripped up Monday morning. And then they're writing into like hour two of the show. Like, you know, it's just like, I get, it's gotta be, you know, we armchair book it, you know, we all do it from time to time, but like I just don't get how that working environment can be good. Like, like it is the show for one man, that man is Vince. And to kind of, you know, deal with that every, like to know really like every, you know, Sunday, Monday, this is what you're going to have to deal with. It is the lifestyle. Like, you know, it's, I'm, you know, not to shit on it totally, but you know, some people that are doing it, I'm sure they love it, but at the same time, like how I view it as an outsider, I just don't see how it can be. Oh, Dean, putting a stop right away to Ray going at it. I just don't see how it can be great. I don't know.
Gallant effort right now is really looking
really on the deck. Dusty on commentary.
Dean Malenko's strategy from the opening bell has worked to a T.
Yes, they're really working this whole thing where, you know, the technician's just kind of beating them up here. Oh, pretty nice little suplex there. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Snapped it hard. Yeah. You figure too, what are you, because we see it a lot too. I feel like for a long time, and I didn't even realize, like, so many of these, like, older guys, like behind the scenes producers, like, you know, IRS, and, you know, you've got Dean Malenko now, you know, doing a lot for AEW. Like, is there anybody that you can think, like, I'm just kind of, you know, thinking out loud here, anybody that you're like, boy, they should really, like, based on their career, like, why they should have a backstage, like, job?
I'll tell you, that's the easiest question you may have ever asked me on here. The person who does not work backstage that should more than anyone else in the wrestling business, and I don't even think you can argue with me on this. I don't even know if there's anyone that comes close. Again, of people that don't currently work backstage or really haven't ever, it's Scott Hall.
Ah, interesting.
Okay. The guy is, I mean, I've heard from so many, you know, on different interviews over the time, how brilliant he is and great ideas he came up with, both guys knocked out. How many great ideas he came up with. And then you probably know this, but I did one of those, like, you know, meet and greet lunch things with him at StarCast. So I was sitting mm-hmm. there with him for an hour, just shooting the shit with, you know, 10 other people. Man, the guy's just so just smart with the wrestling business. And obviously he has, you know, personal challenges over time. And I don't know if he can handle a road schedule, but dude, I'm telling you what, man, like, he is so good with that stuff. And I just love to see him backstage going, hey, you try this or thought about this, man, that's what you need. You know, I mean, obviously Shawn Michaels is great in that role. I mean, you have to credit NXT a lot of stuff in there to him, no different than Triple H too.
Yeah.
So that's who comes to mind for me. What about you?
That's interesting because now that we're talking about it, I've never really thought it through. Like, I asked it, but
it's a great question.
I'm going to delay a little bit here and kind of work through it because, yeah, you know, you're right. Like, Triple H and Michaels, so much of what NXT is today is them. Like, you know, you hear about, like, Johnny Gargano working with Triple H and things like that. I think one of, like, the best kind of returns, if you will, that I saw, you know, recently, like, you and I both, like, Jake the Snake coming back.
He's a great one too. That's a guy you want, you know, just being in the room, just giving ideas. Hey, have you thought about this or add this element? I mean, that's what you need. You need guys like that.
And you and I, like, you know, in our shoot jobs, like, you know, we work a lot of times and have a lot of conversations about, like, peer mentors and kind of doing that stuff. It's like, yeah, like, these guys, oh boy, quick little move set there, or set of moves. It's one of those where, yeah, like, you know, it makes sense to, like, why, like, have Jake in the back, like, you know, have it. My aunt was actually, I think she sat next to him on an airplane once, like, way back in the 90s. And so, yeah, it's one of those where some of those, they just make sense. And then, like, yeah, I just, like, God, it's crazy to think, like,
who do you have in that room instead of Jake Roberts and Scott Hall? You know who you have in that room? You have some dweeb Hollywood reject sitcom writer that is in there writing wrestling storylines. And that is probably the biggest problem WWE has, is they've got the wrong people writing this shit.
And they're writing TV and not wrestling, right?
Yeah, and I know you're entertainment, but guess what? Randy Savage, wow, would have moved by Mysterio there.
Yeah.
Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 5, that feud, that was great fucking television, okay? You didn't need a sitcom writer to write that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand it's entertainment. Yeah, you have to have storylines. There was just a great special on the WWE Network about the Savage Flair. She was mine before she was yours, WrestleMania 8 feud. That's great shit. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like, oh, we need writers. You got people that can write stuff.
Right. Oh, wow. Big snapmare. Jesus.
A lot of it falls now.
We're getting deep into the match at this point. And I think, and for me, like personally, if I had to pick a name of somebody that, like, you know, the, from the behind the scenes, oh, big power bomb there, caught Ray, Dean did. Fans all up on their feet.
Everyone's on their feet. I mean, this is just the cruiserweights, man. They were just so over. The fans just loved them. This was fantastic.
And I'm with you too on like whether or not he would want to do the road schedule, but like, and it feels weird giving him a producer title, but like Stone Cold, like if to me and like the things we've heard about before and the, like the interactions he's had with other wrestlers of just like little bits of coaching and like just the tidbits he's given of like, you know, how to develop, like you need like developing your character. I know I can think of like Bailey telling stories about like her getting tips from him. Oh, just flipping Ray out there. I feel like we got a big spot coming here. This looks crazy. Oh, Jesus. There it is. Oh, that's quick. Okay. It was like a twisting power bomb. And Dean great gets match. The win. Yeah.
Great match. Great end.
And new champ. And new. There you go. Didn't expect it. All right, cool. But yeah, Stone Cold would be my answer.
You know what I'd do? I'd find about 10 or 15 guys if I'm WWE, and I'd say, look, we're going to give you $100,000 a year, okay? Just whenever you see something on TV that you think we should do differently or better or something with a character, let us know. Shoot Bruce Pritchard a text and just tell him, hey, this guy, here's what I would do with this character. Just like consultants, you know, a Mick Foley would be really good. A Steve Austin, Jake Roberts, Scott Hall, find me 10 of those guys and be like, hey, you don't got to watch every single, you know, thing that we do, but do us a favor, keep an eye on the current product. And when you see opportunities for improvement, let us know.
They're all under legends contracts anyways.
Yeah, you bump them up by $100,000. You're like, try to give us some good ideas or, you know, feedback on characters, you know, maybe, you know, that's kind of thing. So, all right, great match. Let's go ahead and get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, so what'd you think?
Exceeded my expectations. That was pretty good. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. Like, you know, we say around here, we try not to watch the match, but we know the outcome a lot of time just from doing our research. But
you know what's funny? Like, I got to tell you, I don't know why, but I thought Mysterio was going to win the match. And so I was like really surprised at the end. So that was kind of, it was good.
Hey, he got the win. That's all right. So yeah. just kind of crazy to watch that. But yeah, so what kind of happened after this? You had Malenko defending the title. It was actually against Psychosis, another kind of, you know, carryover from all around. It was at World War III. He ended up losing the title to Ultimate Dragon, whatever you call him. It was at Starcade of that year. I remember being a big Ultimate Dragon fan.
Oh, I loved his look, man.
Yeah, it was just, the look was super cool. Like, you know, he's just, I remember again in the video games back in those days being him all the time. It was just always really cool. And so he a little bit of back and forth at that point. There was some Clash of Champions where Ultimate Dragon, had the title. Dean actually won it back from him as well, too. It was Clash of Champions. That would be 34 is what I'm looking at. Yep. And so my Roman numerals. And so kind of doing that. And so again, and then losing it to 6 X-Pac, you know, whatever you want to call him. And so it's just kind of interesting how that played out. But then Malenko eventually, again, kind of rekindling the feud between him and Eddie, it had been involved in Malenko, Eddie being involved in kind of Dean losing his match against Six. And so kind of moving on, the two of them having moving up maybe some ways to taking on Eddie for the US title. And so, seeing a lot in Dean and these guys, proven workers, you know, that had worked together before a whole lot. And so still able to do that. And so, it carried out through 1996. And then Ray, him at this point, he actually, again, challenging Ultimate Dragon, not winning that one. He ended up going after the WCW World Television Championship. It was another one getting involved with Steven Regal as well, too, or Lord Steven Regal, excuse me. And so having that. And so just kind of, you know, interesting. He actually went on to feud a little bit with some of the New World Order members and Conan. It was actually Road Wild 1997. And so, again, you know, kind of having those. And then he came back around, too, to having his feud with Eddie as well. The title mask, you know, title versus mask, Halloween Havoc. And so, you know, got that. And so, I in regards to the aftermath, it was just one of those where I feel like it really speaks to the build as well, too. Like, while, you know, there was matches and things happening, there wasn't like a dedicated storyline to these guys and what was happening other than, you know, they were some of the better wrestlers and going after the belt. While there may have been some little things, you know, some DQs and people run-ins and things like that getting involved, like just kind of kept having their careers, plain and simple, and kind of having those stories and what was going on and what was happening. Thoughts on the aftermath? Get into the reviews.
Yeah, get into the reviews.
So this is one I'll start with. So this year, 1996, Dean was number 13 on the PWI and Ray was seven.
Wow.
Yeah. I had the same reaction with you when I was, and so how I do this is I pull up the list and then I'll do just a word search for their names. And I was like, oh shit. Like they were super high that year. Like that, you know, that's crazy. And so, I mean, top 10 alone, like it's just nuts. And so, and then to kind of give you an idea of who is ahead of these guys, because I find it kind of funny. You've got Shawn Michaels was number one in 1996. Then you had The Giant, Sting, Kenta Kobashi, Ahmed Johnson, Kevin Nash, and then Ray. And then Hulk, Sabu, Ric Flair, Goldust, and Dean.
Was Shawn Michaels, was that the guy that thought he was cute and but knew he was sexy?
I think, well, yeah, he knew he was sexy. You're right. Yeah, and that's right. That makes sense. I think something with the ladies, too. I forget. They like him.
He drove the girls wild.
That's what it was. He drove them wild. Yep. You sound like you know a little. You've heard of the guy. I know.
In fact, he had the looks that really move him.
You know, occasionally, you know, it's good to see that you're kind of branching out some of your wrestling idols and kind of people you like. And so, yeah, we'll look into this guy. He sounds like he could be something.
One more thing I'll add, though, is he was not your boy toy.
He wasn't. Good. I'm not looking for one, so I appreciate that. So, all right. Good job.
So both guys ranked way higher than I would have expected. I can tell you that.
Right. Yeah, they did. And so, but no surprise, 1996 and Shawn being number one. That's not a surprise, but yeah. So, but yeah, these guys, so yeah, really high on the list and kind of what they were doing. And when looking at the list too, like, you know, while there's a few, you know, WCW names on here, like, you know, in regards to quote cruisers, like they were easily to the highest people. Like they were the smallest bunch of like that group. So, so this one, the Pro Wrestling Torch, for the sake of like, you know, kind of cutting the play-by-play on some of this, I just kind of gave you some of the quotes on this. So if you look these up yourselves, I've cleaned them up a little bit, but a great match, but a notch short of a match of the year candidate, 4.5 stars. And then one of the kind of write-ups, so as far as holding my interest, Halloween Havoc most closely resembled a ski jump. It started out at a high level with the Mysterio Jr. versus Malenko bout. Despite a noticeable downshifting in gears in the middle of the bout, it was the best of the show. From there, the quality slid downward. By the final hour, I was totally bored. And so, weird when you start off as hot as like Dean and Ray, and then you had DDP and Eddie kind of opening the show. And by the time it closes, like you're sick of seeing like Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Booker T, Stevie Ray, Hogan, and Savage. Like that says a lot, like especially back then in 1996 and kind of having that and having to deal with that. And so, this was easily like the Observer, like easily the match of the night, like kind of ran away with it. You know, and the kind of takeaway quote from this one was, this was easily the show stealer, 4.25 stars. And so yeah, 4.5, 4.25. Me personally, I'll go first on this one. I disagree with it kind of slowed down a little bit in the middle. I feel like it made sense in regards to the match of, yeah, like, and I don't even view it as like a rest hold necessarily, like in regards to keeping the pace of the match and like Ray grounded, that made a lot of sense to me. And so I thought there was like, and I always try and put myself in the position of what was going on then and kind of what we were seeing as a whole in wrestling. Like for me, I'm actually going to give this one an 8. I thought it was
really
Really? Yeah, I actually thought it was pretty good because I think while it didn't have the biggest reason for me is because I am a huge, like, I want the in-ring product to be good. I want the story to be told in the ring, you know, more a lot of times than, you know, what we're seeing on the week-to-week build. And so I think why I like New Japan as much as I do is because they tell the story in the ring so much, and like the wrestling itself is good. And I so much of WWE is the soap opera of it, and like kind of, you know, watching that and the drama. But at the end of the day, like, I just want to see two competitors, you know, do what they do at the top of their game in a match like that. And so, and I think that's what we got was, and it was very early in their careers, but I think we definitely got two great competitors putting in like the work in the ring and really doing, like, it wasn't a spot fest, like, you know, the slowing down, everything made sense to me. And so, yeah, I'm going to give it an 8.
Wow.
Seems surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. You know, I mean, as far as the match was good, I mean, there was no like major build or aftermath that, you know, made it iconic. So for me, again, I liked the match a lot, but I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay. Yeah, that's all right.
Our furthest discrepancy ever
in a while. Yeah, in a while. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. We don't venture too far away, but yeah, this is one, and we don't discuss these ahead of time, so we always remind people that, like,
this is not, you know what this is, Jeff? It's a total shoot.
God damn it! All right,
we're not working everyone right now. This isn't some big choreographed numbers here.
No, it's not. And so, like we said at the top of the show, we'll kind of wrap this one up at Payoff Pod. You know where to find us. We're going to respond to you guys. We like seeing all you guys dropping some notes, letting us know what you're thinking, things like that. Let us know what you think about it. Go back, check this one out. It's one that's not necessarily the top of the card, but that's okay. It was just kind of good wrestling, and I'm a fan of that. And so, yeah. With Tom, final thoughts, send us home.
Yeah, man. Good match, good episode. These cruiserweights, man, let's cover some more of them because they're really good, and they kind of, to your point earlier, they fly into the radar. So this is a fun one.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, as always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.